One of the things about the talks is people usually have a lot of questions. So I reserve a lot of space, so if you have a question, we'll have to feel free to ask. We've got lots of time for that. I work at a company called Collabnet. We develop a product called SourceCast. I'm also the chairman of the Apache Software Foundation, and I wrote a module for the Apache server called MonTab that provides web app capabilities to Apache. So that's kind of my background. I was one of the contributors to the web app RMCs. So I'm just going to go ahead and cover a number of different topics. Basically, in this order, just going through what is it, some basic scenarios for what you might use web app, how you might apply it to a content management system, some of the upcoming specifications for access control and searching. So what is WebDAV? Usually just DAV, for short, stands for Web-Based Distributed Offering and Versioning. Initially, it was built just as an offering specification. That's RFC 2518. They took out the versioning because versioning is a really big problem. They didn't want to hold up the main part of the offering to wait for that versioning piece. And the main goal of it is interoperability between clients and servers to be able to publish content to websites. This isn't just HTML pages, but this can also be, say, spreadsheet files, office documents, anything. A WebDAV server can actually act as more or less like a remote file system, except it's more cross-platform. Different types of clients can interact with that server, things like that. One of the big changes is with the introduction of WebDAV is it turns the web into a writable medium. Historically, surfing the net is always about just downloading. It's only about reading. But with WebDAV, you can actually go and alter the content directly on the server. You don't need to use FTP. You don't need to know about any sort of mappings between, well, if I put it in this location in the file system, it will appear over here. You just go and directly edit the content on the server. And so now websites, you can actually write to them if they're web dev rather than simply reading. So it's two RFCs, 2518, which is the core, and then 3253, which is called Delta V, which is the versioning specification. WebDAV is based on HTTP. We'll talk a little bit more on that later. It uses XML throughout for properties, for specifying control, querying class, things like that. So WebDAV brings a lot of benefits to different types of people. And so I've called out sort of four different groups. This is on the following slide. The first group are just some basic features. WebDAV allows you to attach metadata to any documents, any directory. And so with the metadata, you can easily query for things like title, author, abstract, without actually having to download the full document. You can also get much more intelligent sort of directory listings, if you will. In most cases, people configure the web servers, put on an index.html, or they let Apache generate it. But the client software can't really parse that out. It doesn't really know what some of the other files are that are in that directory. WebDAV provides a way to actually query the server to discover each of the files that are in the server, or in that directory. And so with the WebDAV client, you can actually, the server is much more discoverable. It's not only based on how people are flowing through the site based on the index.html. From an author standpoint, it gives you a standard way to put content on the server. You don't have to worry about putting it on a file server in some location or FTPing in or maybe using SCP or each of these different things or maybe some custom file upload or things like that. There's been any number of different ways that people have built to put content on the server, WebDAV unifies all of that, and you just point directly at a URL and say, I want to change that, that, and that. So there's nothing indirect, there's no extra tools you need, just your client that knows how to put the software up there. You can move, arrange, delete, create, move directories on the server using your WebDAV clients. There's actually no need to log on to the web server machine. You can do it all remotely using WebDAV protocol. You can add the metadata on there, which of course many users can use later. There is override protection, so that if you're editing a document, you can essentially take out a lock on it so that other people cannot offer that, or can't modify that document while you're working on it. And then finally, there's the versioning semantics. And that's a big topic right there. But essentially, Delta V does provide a full set of configuration management semantics with full baseline semantics, different lines of set, all kinds of things. Yes, question?
Now, when you say you add metadata, mm-hmm. where is that going exactly? But does it actually add like hidden files into the...
From a WebDAV point of view, you just see the resources and you store the properties on those files or on the directories. Underneath the covers, the server is going to store it somewhere, somehow. And it's really sort of independent to what you're saying. From the client standpoint.
Is where the metadata goes part of the specification?
The specification is only about the protocol. So from the protocol standpoint, you put a document up there, you attach some properties to it. Now, in the default implementation of MonDev, it stores all the files in the file system. And then there's a subdirectory that has some little DBM files that holds all the properties for each file. But that's one particular implementation. Subversion, it's a new version control system. It also uses MonDAV, but on its backend, it actually stores everything into the Subversion repository. The Subversion repository is a virtual DB database. And so you won't actually see any files or any properties sitting on this. Any other questions? So one of the other groups here is the administrator. And this is kind of what I was just getting at, is all the interaction is via the protocol. People aren't actually logging onto the system. It doesn't matter where the files end up, what kind of structure they have to the user, it's just URLs and they're working with those URLs. But from an administrator standpoint, when say a disk is running out of space, it's called the disk, you just move all the content over to a new path, you don't have to retrain your users on, oh, well, now it's in /home2 rather than /home, because then they're able to see those paths on the server. The other thing is that because it is just via the protocol, your authentication mechanism is via HTTP. People do not have to have logins on that box. And so you can actually create a very secure system because they're just using username and password out of some text file or maybe authenticating against LDAP or something like that, but they aren't actually getting onto the machines. So, for example, at home, I turned off my FTP servers several years ago because I could have a WebDAV server, people could publish their websites that way, and I stopped giving out local accounts on my machines. Which is nice because there was actually a break thing through one of my friends' accounts. So now I don't have to worry about that. There's also for developers a lot of technical benefits around WebDAV, which I'll get into. But the two main things are being based on the HTTP infrastructure, we have sort of all this current sort of older infrastructure to build upon and to leverage. And then WebDAV sort of adds even more onto that to create yet another level of functionality that you can build further software on. The other thing, this, I won't detail too much, but web data can also be used as a replacement protocol. For example, how I replace FTP, I just use web data. But if you take a look at, say, Microsoft's Outlook Express, when you pick up mail from Hotmail, it's actually using web data to do that. It's not a custom Microsoft protocol going on, it's just a standard web data. So they've essentially replaced POP and IMAP and things like that, just using web data semantics. Okay. Yes? Yeah, you're just logging into the web server using standard HTTP authentication, basic, digest, or you can even use something like client certificates to authenticate with the server, all via SSL or straight, normal HTTP. Any form of contacting the server and the authentication mechanism in there is usable by WebDAV. WebDAV is about what goes over the wire, and it sort of gets out of the business of authentication. So WebDAV just kind of passes all that off onto HTTP, saying, well, we don't have to reinvent all this stuff. We can just leverage HTTP. Yeah,
is it I'm trying to understand in the context of content management, is it solely for moving files around? I mean, what if I have a very granular object model and I have very atomic bits of content and I want to group those in different ways as objects? How does WebDAV handle that?
What you would do, and I'll get into a little bit of that, but basically you would map each of your different objects to a different URL, different resource. For example, I was talking with Henry last night or night before about NetGuard, and he's exposing each of the articles as a WebDAV resource. So using any standard WebDAV client, you can put new articles into the NetGuard content management system. And then attachments, sit in subdirectories, other images also you can move up there and attach right in.
So what happens is if I connect to something that's essentially a database record somewhere, it presents that back to me as essentially a file that I'm editing locally if I connected via WebDAV.
That's correct. Yeah, as I was mentioning earlier, from a protocol standpoint, you're putting content up there, maybe you're attaching properties, maybe moving it around, but that's from the protocol side, you don't know how it's implemented, and it doesn't really matter. In the case of a content management system, yes, it's almost always going to be a database of some kind. Could be files on a file system, but to the client that you're using, it really doesn't matter. Yes?
What in your experience, what is the richest and most extensible DAV client? Or is there such a thing?
Well, most of the DAV clients out there right now are good about moving content up the server, moving it around on the server, and only the content. Very few clients actually deal with the properties, with the metadata. And so that's kind of the big thing that's missing right now.
I totally agree, but are there any just below the surface projects that you see because you're so close that would be worth investing?
Well, Cadaver certainly deals with properties. It's a command line tool, so it's not going to be for everybody. There's another one called Kcura, K-C-U-R-A, and that one is a full web app client with property management. There's a Java-based tool called Dav Explorer that also deals with properties. And so those clients will give you sort of the full range of web dev functionality. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about file management, everything out there deals with it. I mean, Mac OS X out of the box, you can mount a web dev server and drag and drop files onto the web server. That's kind of where most of the clients are today, is very simple drag and drop, manage your content, put new content, edit it, things like that.
Yes. Sorry, just interested to know what the support for WebDAV is on like Windows, other commercial products, and things like that. Just
yeah, I'll get to a list of some of the different clients, okay. And we can talk about it. So I listed just a few scenarios where WebDAV might be used. There are departments You might have your departmental server where people need to publish what's going on. Great case for WebJet. Historically, people have had in the store these giant Nobel file servers. And after about 3 years, it's just a total mess. You know, people sort of, well, is this file recent or is this one or not? And so people start turning to web servers because there, at least, you've got some nice navigation overview of the content, different kinds of summaries, and it provides just a better experience for people to find the stuff that is interesting, find stuff that is currently relevant, archive things. Well, WebDev now allows you to easily manage those departmental servers. It's just a drag and drop operation. You can edit the file to point out new content in place there. Makes it very easy. Another thing is web hosting. And this is where, since you don't actually have to have an account on a system, it's great for ISPs. They can just set up people with an HTTP logon based off of some MySQL table. And each time a person wants to have some new web pages on a site, they add another login to MySQL, and off they go. They can start publishing. And the ISP never has to worry about local attacks against their services. It's all simply remote. The other thing is sort of remote or extranet publishing. When you're working with third parties to be able to collaborate on a remote server. This is just something, I mean, there's all kinds of things. The Subversion version control system is actually a version control, so you can do remote development, and that's all using WebDev as a network protocol. You can do all kinds of, when Midgard sort of rounds out some of this DAB capabilities, full content management. SOAP has been a DAB server for years, and so you can address pretty much most or all of the object model, but most through WebDAV against a SOAP server. So, just think about all the different applications that SOAP has been applied to. Each of those are possible to use them like that, too. So, I had remarked earlier about how WebDAV just fills its own HTTP and makes use of it. We get all the benefits. We get the security. We get the authentication mechanisms. We get navigation through proxies and firewalls. Although the firewall administrator can filter out WebDAV methods. We don't tunnel through posts or anything like that. It's actually new methods, although I've talked about that. But it does allow firewall administrators to cut that stuff out. Unlike, say, SOAP or something, where SOAP is tunneled, and so the firewall administrator either has to let it all through or none of it. That's very hard. HTTP, of course, is everywhere, from little tiny servers to old IBM mainframes have web servers on them. And also the talent pool. People just know HTTP, and just kind of as a demonstration, I sort of put this up. How many people in the room are not familiar with that? Raise your hands. Does anyone not know what that is? So basically, it's an HTTP request. Everyone sees that and understands it. Well, that's all WebDAV is it's just HTTP. Instead of saying GET up there, you put in a different method to say make a collection or a copy or move. It specifies new methods, but otherwise it uses everything that you already know. So all of your tools, all of your SDKs, libraries, everything, all works for WebDAV. Any questions? Okay. So yeah, as I said, just layers on HTTP. In HTTP 1.1, the people in charge of spec added specific extension capabilities to HTTP. 1.0, it defined, here's GET, here's each of these different things. But it didn't really describe how to add new methods and what some of the ramifications of that would be, especially on things like proxies. And so HTTP 1.1 went in and cleared all that up. And so WebDAV took advantage of that and defined new methods. For example, copy, make collection, property fines and checkup are just some of them. There's the burgeoning stuff adds about 11 new methods. The core web tab added about half a dozen different methods. So there's a few new HTTP headers, some very minor changes to some of the semantics of the existing things. For example, GETs, in web dev terms, a GET might actually fail if you have a certain header added in there, you know, weird things like that. But otherwise, RFC 2518 is the core, that's the original one that deals with the content management and with locking. And then RFC 3253, the version specification, deals with all of that. 2518 is pretty straightforward. It can be kind of a hard read. But the 3253 is just very, very complicated. It takes a long time to study that one. And even then, there's weird subtleties in it. So mostly, it's about asking questions. So here's the blanks that I was going to give you. This is like just a small subset of some of the plans out there. In the open source space, Joe Orton was one of the very first people to build a client for WebDAV. When I first released ModDAV for Apache back in November 98, people asked me, they're like, wow, this is all really cool, sounds great. What do I use for it? And I said, nothing, there's no clients for it. They're like, well, how stupid is that? I said, somebody had to be first. It was about 3 weeks later when Joe Orton released an update to a site copy program that we actually had a client that could talk to a web dev server. What site copy does is it allows you to edit a website locally, and then it sort of synchronizes that up to the server. And originally it was all done using FTP, and then he added in a web dev layer. And actually, it's very interesting because the WebDAV version was much faster than the FTP versions. Because on the FTP, for each file transfer, you would have to open a brand new connection. Whereas with HTTP and the sort of keep alive, would open up one connection and then just jam all the content up through that one connection. So it's very fast. It's also much more robust. As I was mentioning earlier, get sort of these smarter directory listings. Well, if you ever sort of log into an FTP server and type ls, there's dozens of different formats for how that directory listing comes back. If your target machine is a Windows box or a VMS machine or any of a dozen varieties of Unix, that listing is going to be different. And so tools that need to use that listing, like sitecopy, have to understand how to parse this in all of its different forms. But in WebDAV, there's an actual specification for here is the XML that will be returned to detail each of the directory items. And so you can actually get much more robust tools by using something like WebDAV instead of FTP. So within the node space, there's the nonlist file manager. Nonlist can mount a NAS server. So you can just drag and drop files up onto your web server using Nautilus. Within GNOME and KDE, they have this notion of a sort of virtual file system. And one of those virtual file systems is a WebDAV server. So any tool that uses GNOME VFS, or I think it's called KIO, any tool that uses those can also talk to a DAV server. Also, I think they've got FTP servers and HTTP servers in there. But the interesting one, of course, is the DAV stuff. SkunkDAV and DAV Explorer are two Java-based clients. They're also clients for the classic Mac OS. The current Mac OS 10 is just out of the box. When you go to mount a volume, that volume can be a DAV server. And the Mac OS X server, it's file sharing. The Apache, they've got Apache and the ModDAV module in Mac OS X server, and you can serve up content from your Mac OS box via WebDAV. And you know, they've added on all the nice little bells and whistles to make that really easy. Commercial software, Microsoft, is a very big proponent of WebDAV. along with Adobe. Both of those companies really, really pushed the budget. In Microsoft's case, they didn't want to deal with a billion different protocol stacks. NMTP, SMTP, POP, IMAP, this, that, and the other thing. They said, let's just build one protocol stack and do everything around that, and that was WebGAP. And so I mentioned the Hotmail thing, but also between Outlook and Exchange, that's all WebGAP that's on there. They used to have Mappy, but they got rid of that too in favor of WebGAP. I think you can still use Mappy, but it's all deprecated in favor of WebGAP model. Adobe, all of their products either already have or will soon have DAS support. I talked to the Adobe Engineering Division about 4 years ago when they were just putting WebGAP as one of their technology initiatives. And so they brought me in and I talked to them, all right, here's what WebGAP is, here's how it can help, here's how you can use it in your software, how it can benefit users of all your different offering products. And so they just started adding them in. And I think it's pretty much all done. And I think they've got DAP in just about every offering product. Illustrator and Photoshop. Paul Everett has been working on a new DAP client called Twingle. Spoke about it yesterday morning. It's an in-browser DAP client, runs as a Mozilla application. It will also hopefully run as an IE application. And it's essentially intended as a content offering client tool. And uses WebGAP to talk to a content management system. Paul's sort of idea behind this was to create a nice tool for content management. It speaks WebGAP, so if the content management systems want to use the tool, they should start speaking WebGAP also. And I think you've got about half a dozen different CMSs on board.
Let me count.
So, yeah, Twingle is doing a good. Really, there's all kinds of stuff. Windows, Microsoft Windows natively speaks WebGAP. In Microsoft Windows XP and later, you can mount right on as a drive layer. You can mount it, so then any application can interact with the web server. Prior to that, there's a thing called web folders, and web folders would be inside Windows Explorer. You could see a dev server, drag and drop, delete things, but it was only in Windows Explorer. If you opened up Notepad, you couldn't get to that content, because Notepad only knows about things mapped to drive letters. Microsoft Office, since, I think, 99, was when they released a version of Office that could speak WebGAP. And so, in Microsoft Word, you can type in a URL for a WebGAP enabled resource, open it up, edit the content, save that, and close it down. You don't have to involve FTP, no drag and drop, you can do it all from within Word. You can even, inside of the open dialog, type in a portion of a URL on a DAS server and navigate and browse around and find the document that you want to edit.
An interesting anecdote on the Exchange part was that when Zimian released Evolution, their email client, and they provided a four-theme product to talk to the, let Zimian talk to Exchange servers. Everyone thought they were just freaking brilliant for reverse engineering the Exchange protocol. When all they did was you have to turn on WebDAV access on your Exchange server, and they just watched the protocol. And whatever Microsoft sent, whatever URNs and schema stuff they sent, they just supported that. So they used WebDAV to connect to Exchange.
Yeah, Microsoft, they actually publish the entire object model, all the properties and all of that on MSDN for Exchange. But there's always subtleties. When do you have this property, when do you not? Some of the real sort of nitty-gritty semantics. And there's where Zimian would have had their sort of value adds to get in there and figure that out.
Yep. In fact, that's kind of an application like Tony was saying about something that's richer than files. You can talk to calendar events, all kinds of things through WebDAV.
Yes, yes. Microsoft, they do use standard web data, but they layer on a bunch of custom properties and, you know, the particular layout of all the different resources. And that's where the value add is, because Outlook is going to talk to a data server and it wants to see certain properties, certain layouts, and, you know, somebody just doing this on Apache is going to have a lot of work to provide all that information. And vice versa, a client feels stuck in all that information from Exchange. So Microsoft is using standardized protocol, but at the application layer, they're adding a whole lot more stuff. And that's where they're adding.
They also extend the protocol layer.
They monkey really kind of translate header.
I mean, they really...
Or the B stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they really extended the it's not like they just pull the protocol.
For many of the operations, you can use standard web data, but the batch operations.
What are the implications of web data on LAMR network traffic?
It's HTTP traffic.
So it's stateless, I understand that. But
yeah.
Is it a heavy protocol?
No. It's actually lighter than SMB to fetch client. People have done sort of traffic analysis on SMB file sharing versus HTTP file sharing, and the number of packets that are actually moved over the network are fewer, with, you know, I mean by a small margin, but when you're talking about a lot of traffic, it's nice. And certainly from a stateless standpoint, you can scale the service by the way.
Another interesting point on that is that you know, everyone says XML so verbose, but in this case it pays off to use GZIP on Apache. You'd be surprised at how well prop finds requests can compress over a wide area network.
Yep. Yeah, in Subversion, since we are using HTTP and WebTAP, we just turn on Apache 2 host modded plates, and then the client library we use understands it. And so we just naturally get GZIP compression over the wire automatically for everything to check out and connect to it on the server. It's kind of cool.
Well, what is the case on the LAN? Of course, you always get a whole pod. So you always get a whole pod.
You can do the range, yes.
Yeah, but can you do bringing one on?
Yes. So specifically, Adobe Acrobat does range, yes. We use it in Apache 2 overall, and it's essentially our test suite. It's one of the few clients that really actively uses RangeGX. And so we test our range support in Apache 2. As far as range puts, ModDev supports that. Not all dev servers appear to. And so the guys at Apple working on the client file system to be able to mount a dev server. Generally, they can't do range supports because they don't know if the target server supports it. And so if you try and put these 10 bytes, you know, 20K into the file, if it doesn't support it, instead you just blew away the whole file, now you have 10 bytes. So,
well, they obviously don't do it, so people are adding too fast. About the mount on a metal is 10 bit long.
I think they're trying to figure out how to put it in, you know, detection. Am I talking about that? Can I do this? But I haven't spoken to him in a while now. But the point's very valid. Typically, like when you get is going to be the whole file.
So it's still an NFS replacement.
Pardon?
So it's still not an NFS replacement.
I know people that are dropping NFS and Samba and just using WebDAV for their file sharing.
For file sharing, I can write data.
So servers, there's a gazillion commercial servers out there. As far as open source ones, primarily is Apache, Zope. Tomcat and Jakarta Slide are some sort of Java-based servers, but they're kind of crappy. So I seriously, the default thing in Jakarta Slide, last time I looked at it, held all content in memory. And when the guy restarted his server and asked, where did my content go? So, he pretty much has a lot of room to use Jakarta Slide. You know, it would be nice if you have a repository and want to put a web app front end onto a repository. It'll do a lot of that processing, but you have to make the connection between Slide and your repository. There's some of the new systems like Midgard and some of the other CMSs are adding DAV support now. So I think all of those are all sort of new implementations instead of leveraging off of these. Yes?
Are you aware of how big the interaction with Apache is in the web app PST implementers?
Yeah. So what happens is the PHP script will see, oh, this is a prop file, parse it out using the built-in XML parsing, figure out the response, and generate the response. Historically, you could write a DAV server on Apache with a CGI script, except for the options method. Which is used to sort of say, oh yes, I'm DAV capable. You couldn't actually implement that in CGI, so it was kind of a little hole right there. With the Netscape server, now this is back in 98, 99, when people were trying to do this, Netscape wouldn't even pass the new methods off to CGI, so you couldn't even get started on Netscape. But now it's a lot better. I don't think anyone's written a mod pro based DAV server yet, but people have been doing it for years. So the commercial servers are things like, Zythos is probably the biggest sort of web DAV commercial server. What they do is they take their server into enterprises and build applications using DAV as sort of a technology substrate. So, you can integrate with an existing DAV server or go ahead and write it yourself. It is quite a bit of work to get to the edge cases. You can get simple functionality going very, very quickly to deal with moving the files up and down from the web server, moving them around. It's when you start getting into properties that it gets a little more difficult, and then you have to hit the locking. That adds some of its own complexity. And the versioning, I really wouldn't recommend trying that unless you really have a dev push. Yes.
So when we talk about subversion using DAV, you're not saying that it's using prevent DAV versioning. It's doing its own versioning and it's using DAV.
WebDAV is a protocol, and also within the protocol it essentially specifies an object model. And subversion maps its semantics into that model when it's talking on the network. So you issue a make activity, which is one of the relative things to construct an activity, which is essentially kind of like a change statement. And so we issue make activities, just as if it was a standard Delphi server we were talking to. And then we go ahead and we check out some resources into that activity, modify them, and then when we're all done, we issue the merge to merge that change set into the repository. And so underneath, what's happening is ModDAV has got two layers. One on the front side, which deals with the caching, parsing, balance, everything, and then the back side is pluggable. And the default back side uses the file system. Subversion plugs in and uses the subversion repository. There's another project called Catacomb that is another plugin and puts all the content into the MySQL or Oracle database.
So you can use any client to talk to a subversion server, you don't need to use the subversion?
Well, we use Delta V for a network protocol, but we aren't a full Delta V server. Essentially, we've sort of implemented this path, you know, this sort of slice of the full Delta V spec to implement the semantics we need. And then that's going to be in our 1.0 release. And then in the next release, what we're going to do is go ahead and flesh out so that you'll have you know, the full notion of a baseline, the full activity. But right now, we have make activity, but can't get some of the activity properties off of it, things like that. So we use it, but just a incremental slice.
Does the other client support that?
Well, you can take a Subversion server and mount the Subversion repository on a Macintosh or on Windows and see it. You can't make changes, though, because you have to use the Delta V operations. Now, all that said, we have added a thing called auto-versioning. It's an experimental feature in Subversion that does allow you to just drag and drop a file right into the Subversion repository, and it'll construct a new revision for you. It'll sort of generate a log message, and yeah, just drag and drop. Other questions? All right. So one of the questions when you want to integrate DAB into the content management system is, how are you going to map each of the objects to resources? You know, is each article going to be its own resource? How are you going to map your different templates? How do you map people or other users into the space? What are you going to expose via web DAB? And so each of those items comes out as a resource, or you know, which is identified by URL. And then what kinds of properties are you going to attach to those resources? And when you start getting into the properties, though, that's really sort of more automated solutions that are going to be using WebDAV to interact with your content management system. Because, of course, most clients, as I said earlier, are not actually interacting with properties at this point. But you can have all kinds of different query tools or other custom client-based things to manipulate your content management system via WebDAV. Yes?
Are files pretty special, or can you get put anything with actual property, even if it's a file with it, or is it sort of a file special?
Not sure how to answer that. You can have a zero link resource up there.
You can have a resource with two files.
That's correct.
Yeah.
A resource is a sort of very particular term that comes out of the URI specifications. A resource is essentially some entity on the server, and you can identify it with one or more URLs. And so a file is one of the and one of us, so either of those are a kind of resource. So one of the, I only have a few more minutes, so I'll just kind of breeze through this. One of the extensions to WebDAV that's coming down the pipe is access control list. So right now, to manipulate, if you want to do any access control, that's managed by the standard, say, Apache directives, or you know, whatever the server is. But there isn't a standard way to remotely manage those. And the WebDAV ACL spec is about doing that remote management. It specifies new WebDAV properties. It specifies a new method for setting the access control list on the resources. So you can do read, write, delete, query type access control on the individual basis. The next one, the ACLs, this one is very close. They've actually sent it to the IETF-RC editor, got some suggestions back, they're implementing those changes, and I think it's been sent back. So it should have an RFC, I would guess this year. The next one, DASL, stands for DAS Circuit and Locating. This one isn't quite as baked as the ACLs. But what this does is it essentially allows you to say things like, please show me all the documents that are offered by Greg Stein. And it will come back with a list of those documents and any properties of those documents that you ask for. So you could say, show me everything offered by Greg Stein and return all the titles and abstracts and the last modification made. And there are a few servers that are starting to implement this along with the access control, but until it's an actual RFC.
Is this yet another query language, or did you use one of the existing?
This is yet another query language. The question did come up, should we use XQL? And I don't remember what the rationale was. But it, basically, when you look at the default query grammar that's in the specification, you know, it almost reads like SQL mapped into XML. You got an XML tag for the select, and an XML tag for the where, etc. But so that's it. One of the big things here that the WebDAV is all about is interoperability, so that you can mix and match clients. You would ask, you know, can any clients interact with a Subversion server? And, well, any WebDAV client can read from a Subversion server, but to write to it, it takes a little more work because you've got to go through the Delta V motions. But there is a guy out there that is doing that. He's implementing, he's actually doing the other side. He's doing, things on the server side. And so he's sort of simulating some of the same things that Subversion does. He wants to point the Subversion client at his server. But, you know, it's, these kinds of interoperability are possible because of this. I mean, you can take any of these clients that I mentioned and the 100 others I didn't, point them at your content management system, point them at your website, point them at whatever, and it'll work. Whether your server is SOAP or Apache or IIS, all these are GAP-enabled and all of them work.
So the Dave mentioned this morning was about people working together. I think DAB is a really sterling example of that in practice, mainly because of Jim's interoperability events. Can you talk a little bit about that? The interop events?
Yeah. We've had two of them so far where a whole bunch of WebDAV implementers, client implementers, and server implementers get together in a big old room and we have this matrix. Okay, can you talk to this server? Can you talk to this client? And we just go through and test every single thing and do, you know, as much sort of broad-based testing as possible to track down problems. And we've had a lot of different issues in different servers and clients through that. And so it just increases the overall interoperability of all these different tools. Usually people walk out of there with, you know, half a dozen different things to change.
Question?
Yes.
How about interrupting Microsoft?
Yeah.
And that good enough? Do you have to break the protocol in which you do that? Or do you ever, people ever talk to the city that Facebook Microsoft doesn't follow this back? So
it depends on what aspect you're talking about. As Rob was saying, in between Outlook and Exchange, there's a little more than WebDAV. On a technical basis, it is WebDAV. There's a little bit more going on there. But when you're talking about Windows Explorer and Word, that's WebDAV.
Is it?
Yes. They have this funny little translate header, but WebDAV doesn't implement it, and I hope people I never will, because it is not
well, they also do this thing where they check first to see if you're front page. And then you have to correctly say, no, I'm not front page. And then it'll try again to do that.
Yeah, that's part of the WebDAV
stuff.
That's part of the WebDAV worker, the reality.
It's part of the Microsoft client-side support. He wants to try and find a front page server first because front page has got essentially dev capabilities plus some more RPC-like things that are going on. And ModDAV will reply and say, well, here's all the options, and then there's a special header, and that's author via the DAV. And so basically that says, look, don't even try some of the other funny things, just go straight to DAV. Because if you try the other funny things, they're going to fail too. And, so in terms of like Windows Explorer talking to ModDAV, yeah, that's fine. You have to add in a couple extra XML attributes on one of the responses to be able to set to say here's the date format that the thing is in. But you know, adding that in also. Yes.
I kind of find it interesting that you mentioned that Microsoft was still just that. You did not quite implement it. I mean, just reading the more about the cable is. I get the impression that very few people were thinking about the
Yeah, it's all built on a technology called Rosebud. And Rosebud is their only provider to do that. And, you know, it's an awful implementation, but it is what they're doing. I don't know of any other client implementations. Maybe, this was 96 to 98 when I was there. And maybe the past 5 years, they built some more.
It seems like there's completely different proposals when you look at your
When you install SharePoint, it will install an updated client, and that's also tends to break some other stuff, right? It may, as far as I know, it's different versions of the same thing. But yes, maybe it is kind of
In terms of interoperability, you have never problems with Microsoft, you have never problems with managers. If you have a house of Microsoft, ground web players, you always have problems.
Yeah. They also get into solutions with HTTP authentication. Other questions? Yes.
Is anybody doing any help with systems just like RSync? So I know I'm looking at a file system, I'm pretty good, it's just another volume. Or you've got some systems such as like a screen engine, I'm going to deal with a file system instead of RSync.
If you know your permissions correct, yes, you could RSync like a mod dev, FS,
or possible.
We do that on We should come out of our own. And I've got
that's a big permissions problem for us.
As I mentioned, ModDAV is not different back end. But if you're using the default one that's what's next on the file system, our simple word, just when you get it to its target location, make sure it has the right owner and group and privileges on both sides, so that because the web server process is interacting with those files, and so they have to be modifiable by the web server process.
One thing you should take care of is that you also sync your lock ED.
Yes.
When you have a special database that you want to use for locking up facilities. Does my dev use that system locking facilities or the locking system that we have
in my dev? It does not use the system locking. The ModDAV exposes the locking to dev clients, and so therefore it doesn't use the system, which makes it a lot more portable, makes it easier to do things like when you're moving files around. In dev, when you move a file out from under a lock, it loses the lock. If you move a file with a system lock, the lock is going to go with it. So there's some different things that it makes it a lot easier to just implements once it comes up. This is what Ralph was talking about, is there's an EDM file that records all those locks. And technically you can just delete that file.
Yeah, but you lose the lock.
You lose the lock.
Comes out to different one.
And actually, this is the interesting thing in Microsoft Word. If you delete a lockout from underneath Microsoft Word, it really means that. So,
how does it mean that?
You can no longer close the document, you can't save it anywhere else, and you can't save it on the server. All your changes are just kind of shut the data thing down.
If I want to trigger some kind of action when they file changes to WebDAV, on the server, what would be easiest to use?
That's sort of out of the bounds of the protocol, so it's going to depend on the server implementation.
Yeah, I was wondering which server implementation would I choose? Should I write a plugin to ModDAV?
For something like that, I would think probably SOAP might be the easiest thing. Do you guys have triggers?
Lots of weird stuff. Yeah, we do lots of real stuff, can't we?
Yep.
Okay. Basically, every file is a Python object that you can write your own class, and it will make your own methods for all the DAV operations.
Does it put those files into the file system?
No.
You can expand that in logging, because we have a very modular logging type API. So every DAV operation is basically some web request. You can basically just look at the logging stage and catch all the interesting ones.
Right.
That's the simple solution.
Oh, yeah. That was the next next thing. MODDEV doesn't have any specific trigger facilities, but through the rest of the Apache API, you can do things like that. So, you know, it depends where you're comfortable programming, what kind of trigger you want to do.
Another question. Well, one thing is, I run a utility, Watch, and another utility called Denotify, which the BSDs and Linux have to like OS APIs to let you know, like, just want to modify or whatever. Just why I was interested, how exactly, you know, MODDEV was integrated with, like, it was using the situation as well.
Right. Not for lots, but for files to. Any other questions?